Back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, August 4th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I chatted about the reluctance of the state's big teachers unions to jump in to get behind a federal voucher program sponsored by the Trump White House that involves no state money. ABC News digital journalist Orrin Oppenheim joined us. We talked about some of the day's big primaries, especially in the Midwest, while Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute dropped by for her weekly update and chat. So what if I told you, what if I read you this headline as it appears in a Hearst publication today? I'm going to read you part of the headline here, and you tell me in your mind, in your mind's eye, your mind's ear, really quickly, whether or not there's anything disturbing in this headline. It's a story by Natasha Sokoloff. Actually, the story was posted late yesterday, but it is a continuing issue that we've been following, at least I have on this program, and I think Lisa has done some stuff on it too, and Melissa as well. Well, if you heard this headline, what would you think? Here's the headline, quote, most K through 12 Connecticut students could qualify for a new scholarship or new scholarship if the state opts into a new program. Right? I'll read it again. Most K through 12 Connecticut students could qualify for new scholarships if the state opts into a new program. Now, you're saying to yourself, scholarship, that's good, right? Isn't that a good thing? Right? Wouldn't the state's teachers union, the Connecticut Education Association, and AFT Connecticut, wouldn't they be all on board for it? No, sir, no, ma'am, no kids, no nona, no papa, no. Because I left a five-letter word out of the headline there, and the word was Trump. So the real headline without my editing here is this. Most K to 12 Connecticut students could qualify for new scholarships if the state opts into new Trump program or into Trump program. And the story starts, I'll read a little bit of this for you here, because it just shows the intransigence, the temper tantrums that our two main state teachers unions always throw. And sadly, our majority Democratic leadership in Connecticut act as lapdogs to, from the governor's office on down. Whether or not thousands, not a few well-to-do students, not picking and choosing, whether or not thousands of K to 12 students in Connecticut will qualify for scholarships under a new federal program rests on a decision the state has yet to make. Yes, yes. Some of the people from the governor on down need to have a spine on this, and I don't think they will. Now, there's a new federal tax credit. And I've told you about this before, but I want to tell you about this again because there's a great story in CT Insider. And the governor has not said whether or not he's going to participate in this yet. And the teachers' unions, the CEA and the AFT Connecticut, are acting like spoiled children. They're throwing fits that the governor might actually consider this. But here's the thing, folks. It's a no-brainer. There's no Connecticut school funding at all involved here. But yet just the idea of giving many families, including many minority families too, black and Hispanic families who are in lousy, underperforming schools, just the notion of giving those people a choice through the federal government and bypassing the rigmarole in Connecticut apparently doesn't sit well with AFT Connecticut and with the Connecticut Education Association. And that's not me saying it. They're the ones warning the governor, hey, don't you do this. And of course, I hate to say it, but my gut feeling tells me the governor and the Democrats in Hartford are going to kowtow to these people. They're going to genuflect at the altar of the teachers' unions, and not at least give this a shot. and they're bitching and moaning and whining about funding. You know how, you know, Connecticut's one of the top four per pupil funding states in America. It's about $24,000 a year. So this notion that, oh, it's going to take so much money and we don't fund the poor children. Oh, please stop it. You get ridiculous after a while. The new federal tax credit that's launching next year, and again, Connecticut still has not made a decision on this, even though like 30 other states have. Because, of course, here in Connecticut, we can't do something that 30 other states do, because, God forbid, the teachers' unions might get upset. Oh, can't have that, can we? In Connecticut, says right here, the pressure is on Governor Ned Lamont, who's facing clashing calls about whether the state should be on board as the incumbent Democrat campaigns for a third term. Come on, Governor, grow a spine on this. You yourself have said in the past, this is like free money. You've said this, and you're right. It is like free money. So what are you so afraid of, Ned? What are you afraid of? Tell the teachers' unions to go pound sand. You're the governor, and we're going to do this. Show some freaking leadership. Opt into it for a set amount of time. If it doesn't work, pull the state out of it. See, folks, this is, again, this is another example of we yammer about school choice and our schools have to get better, just the way we yammer and stammer about electric bills being too high, and we yammer and stammer about this, that, and the other, but there's a lot of stuff that's just too hard to do, or there's too much blowback politically, so we don't do anything. The program is called the Education Freedom Tax Credit. It was enacted as part of that One Big Beautiful Bill Act. So far, about 30 states, 30 out of 50, yes, even I know there are 50 states, even some blue states are going to do this. So it's not all red states, it's mostly red states. But even some blue states are going to do this. So far, about 30 states have indicated they will participate in the program, which allows taxpayers to get a federal tax credit of up to $1,700 annually for donating money to certain nonprofits in their states that will then give scholarships to families, K-12 education expenses, and all that. What's wrong with that? If you're a unionized teacher, tell me what's wrong with that. Because there isn't anything wrong with that. Because the teachers' unions, and not the individual teachers, because I would think a lot of them would be in favor of this, but the unions, it's the same old one-note samba. The hatred that unionized teachers, many of them have, and the school unions for charter schools or for an alternate path of education is so petty. It's so freaking petty. It really is. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How do you not participate in this when there is no state money involved here? Now, I know what the answer is. The governor would have to submit a list of scholarship organizations that these tax credits can be translated into money for. And a lot of people don't like that. So who are we, at what point do we say kids are more important than the teachers' unions? And again, I have nothing against teachers. I have friends and family members who teach. They're wonderful people. Without teachers, we would have an uneducated society. But after a while, some chief executive has got to tell the teachers' unions in this state, we love you, but I'm the boss, and you don't tell me what to do. What do you think? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. You get an up to $1,700 federal tax credit off of what you owe Uncle Sam. And what you have to do is to get that tax credit, you have to follow up and donate to a scholarship-granting organization, an SGO, in your state. Explain to me what the problem is with that. Seriously, How is that destroying public education? I'm telling you, I am so over the state teachers unions, or at least the union brass, many of whom have been on this show before. I don't want to pillory anybody, but come on. And I know there are unionized teachers who think this program would be a decent thing. Maybe other people wouldn't. But how do you not participate in this? See, this is exactly what I mean by we talk such a good job here in Connecticut, and if things get tough, if there's some controversy with tough, we sit there and we say, no, don't do it. You think they would still be saying no if this program was a Clinton-era program or an Obama-era program or a Biden-era program? Of course not. Well, Paul, they wouldn't do that. Yeah, that's the point. We're already spending $24,000 a head per year in Connecticut with students. So there's not going to be any great, any sort of great drop off in this and any great break from people having to pay their property taxes to bankroll all of this. But it's called the Freedom Education Tax Credit. It's pretty simple. You can get a federal tax credit of up to $1,700 annually if you donate to certain nonprofits that will then give scholarships to families for K-12 education expenses if it is a charter school or a religious school or whatever, many times getting Black and Hispanic students out of crappy schools. Schools not crappy because of the teachers or because of the faculty or staff members there, but we all know some schools are underperforming and we need to fix those. Every school should be a high-performing school. But this intransigence is so, I don't even know what the word I'm looking for is. It's so boring. It's so boring. Lamont spokesperson Catherine Vollman say Connecticut is awaiting clarity before making the decision on the school voucher tax credit provision. Oh. That's political speak for saying, hey, the governor likes this, but we're waiting till after the election in November. The states have to participate, have to let the feds know by January 1. I don't think Lamont's going to do it. Or he may. I don't know. He may say, hey, I'm reelected. Everybody in the teachers union can go pound sand. Boy, wouldn't that be refreshing, huh? Of course, Lamont doesn't want to do it. Josh Elliott doesn't want to do it. And Ryan Fazio does. So which party in America wants actually to give parents, many of whom are Hispanic, African-American, low income in some places, give parents a choice? Which party is that? It certainly sounds like it ain't the Democrats, because they kowtow, they genuflect, they put on the knee pads to the teachers unions. And maybe I'm hoping against hope that the governor tells the teachers unions to go pound sand, not the good people who, you know, are teachers and everything. But come on, this is so just boring. The no to everything, where we already spend $24,000 to $25,000 a year per student in Connecticut. How is this a bad idea? Can somebody please explain this to me? Under the law, families with incomes of up to 300% of their area's median income are eligible for the program. There's a cap from about $241,000 to $357,000, depending on the planning area, according to the Census Department. So, yes, upper-income people can take advantage of this. What's wrong with that? Just because you're an upper-income earner doesn't mean your kid's family's really good. Your kid's school, I should say, is really good. And the Republicans have sent a couple of letters up to the governor's office to say, hey, Gov, what are we doing on this? And he hasn't said anything. He says, well, he's waiting for guidance. That's political speak for waiting till the election is over. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We're not talking tens of thousands of dollars per family here. On the donation side, how does this not make sense? You, meaning a taxpayer, maybe you're doing well and you're, you know, on the side of maybe wanting to eliminate some of your tax burden. And the plan says, hey, you've got a $1,700 limit. So we're going to give you a tax credit of $1,700 toward what you owe Uncle Sam. And you get that credit annually. You can do it once a year if you donate to certain nonprofits. Well, you know, Paul, those nonprofits sometimes run charter schools. Yeah, who cares? If the kid's in a rat hole school now that's got, you know, crime in the hallways and lousy test scores, don't they deserve to be in a better school? See, this is the thing that kills me. Where you have a lot of these Democrats and progressives saying, oh, you know, black and Latino kids, oh, they don't have the same opportunities as people that can go to these nice schools. Well, this may get a few more of them in those nice schools. What am I not understanding here? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. All right, as we were just talking about the primary season here. Now, here in Connecticut, we do the primary. Well, the early voting's underway. Primary day, though, coming up next Tuesday, the 11th of August. So we'll be talking more about that. But nationally, a lot of people watching that Michigan race, watching races in Missouri here. Some people trying to make a come back here. Is there a big shift going to continue in the Democratic Party? Joining us right now in D.C., ABC News digital journalist Orrin Oppenheim to talk about that and more. Orrin, good afternoon. It's Paul. How are you, sir?
Doing all right. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. So let's talk about Missouri first before we go with Michigan here, which is fascinating. I believe there are some comebacks now that are being attempted in Missouri.
Yeah, so in Missouri's 1st Congressional District, which includes St. Louis, former U.S. Representative Cori Bush, who was a member of the so-called Progressive Squad in Congress, she's trying to reclaim the seat that she once held. She's facing off against incumbent Representative Wesley Bell, who's the more moderate representative who ousted her just 2 years ago. She's trying to ride this wave of anti-incumbent sentiment, this wave of progressive victories among Democrats that we've seen in other races, in order to try to reclaim the seat. But similar to what we saw 2 years ago, a lot of outside groups, including pro-Israel groups, are spending to support Wesley Bell, who also has the support of the Democratic establishment.
Do we know what, Orrin, what any polling has said in that race? Is it tied? Does it look like a blowout? Any info on that heading into the election?
I haven't really seen that much solid polling, so there's not much we can glean from there. And early voting has just sort of shown, like, I think over 50,000 people have voted early. It's such a blue district that it's really hard to say one way or another through that. Yeah. Certainly, Bush and her supporters are trying to lean on the fact that so far in 2026, five Democratic incumbents have lost their primaries, usually to more progressive challengers, particularly we saw in New York, for instance, 2 months ago. So they're trying to lean on that, but we haven't seen much polling. This seems like it could go either way.
Yeah, and finally, the Michigan thing, obviously, today is fascinating with another kind of anti-establishment Democrat. Really, the polls, I guess, show he has a sizable lead, maybe, but he's going up against a veteran member of Congress, and she's not she's not really that old. We're not talking about an old line Democrat here.
Right, right. Yeah, in Michigan, the Senate matchup between Abdul El-Sayed and Haley Stevens, it's not really a generational discussion. It's more about the progressive El-Sayed saying that he's the right person to take Michigan to represent Michigan and to sort of like pursue these progressive ideas, while Haley Stevens, an incumbent representative who's trying to move to the Senate, is saying that she wants to go in a more moderate direction. So that race goes more along ideological divides. Israel and support for Israel has also become a big issue. Abdul El-Sayed is against U.S. support for Israel and has been very critical of Israel's conduct during the war in Gaza, whereas Representative Stevens has taken a more moderate position. You know, she's criticized Israel's conduct and also said there should be a two-state solution, and she's gone in the outside backing of a lot of pro-Israel groups as well.
ABC News digital journalist Orrin Oppenheim. Orrin, thank you. We appreciate the time. Take care and be well. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. Orrin Oppenheim, ABC News. They're a digital journalist delving into what we're seeing here on Tuesday. Megan Portfolio's here. Megan, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. And yourself?
I'm living the dream. Living the dream. It's too late for law school, too late for med school, so what am I going to do, you know?
Oh, so I'm never going to see you on a big billboard.
Well, no. You probably know. Is that a comment to some of the people in the legal profession? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there is one certain billboard I actually do get a kick out of, and it was the one that just had Ric Flair from the WWE on it. So I'm a big fan.
All right, your latest piece here at the Yankee Institute, Hartford Portfolio. You take a look at the financial disclosures of the three gentlemen, all of whom want to either be the new governor or the returning governor of the state of Connecticut. And what did we find, Megan?
Well, so I had to get this through a Freedom of Information request. All the lawmakers, the executive branch, elected constitutional officers, the bureaucrats, they all have to fill out these statements of financial interest.
Yeah.
And they do it every year. They're not complete balance sheets. They don't disclose values of anything, but it's kind of like a little peek into what, they're investing in and where they're getting their money from.
Yeah.
So I looked at three side by side. Well, I guess side by side, there's three of them. And I did a fair analysis. This is not about politics or anything. It was just, here's the details. Sure. I'm not implying any wrongdoing on anyone's part. This is just the facts, Jack. So I'll start with Lamont's because he was the most complicated. It was 58 pages long. Yeah, well, not surprisingly, his wife is a very successful venture capitalist.
Yeah.
So most of that was disclosures on the different investments she had. They do own a property in Greenwich. Mm-hmm. They also own something called the 57th Street Condo LLC.
Yeah.
And that appears to be a Manhattan condo that they purchased in around 2012 for almost $5 million.
All right.
So like NBD, own multiple properties.
So it's like a crash pad when they're in the city. That's good. All right. I got it. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
And that's about it. There was one thing that I found interesting. When he first took office, he appointed what they call an attorney in fact, and basically gave this person authority to manage certain assets.
Okay.
But the last report from 2025 did not show that this gentleman was actually managing anything.
Okay.
So I don't know if that was throwover language from when he filled this out back then.
Okay.
I wasn't really sure what the deal is, but he used to have someone manage certain assets, and that person doesn't seem to be doing that now.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And then let me jump over to Senator Fazio.
Yeah.
His was basically aggressively boring. It was five pages.
Yeah.
Just a typical, he's a young guy. He has a job. He owns his property in Riverside and had a few investments, like a Vanguard fund.
Yeah.
And he had another fund. So really not much to untangle with his. And then we come to Josh Elliott, Representative Elliott. And again, his filing, no big deal. He looks like just an average capitalist from, the guy running from the left, from the progressive side.
Yeah.
His portfolio is very capitalist. And actually, I was like, this is some stuff that was very interesting that I might even invest in. He has investments in American Express, IBM, McDonald's, Microsoft, Disney, Verizon. And then he just has a couple investment products with BlackRock, New York Mellon, Janus. But then this was the most interesting out of all the reports.
Yeah.
He actually owns two line items for Avangrid Inc. Com, which is the parent company
UI. Yeah.
So I found that to be the most interesting. Now, this disclosure was from 2025, so I don't know if he still owns these. I don't know how much he owns, but he does. He is a shareholder of Avangrid.
Yeah. Did it list his his store in Hamden, Time and Seasons?
Oh, yes. I apologize. Yes.
Yeah.
time and season. I've actually been there.
I have too. In fact, you know, he was at the station here the other day with our midday host, and I said, you know, I said, I've contributed to your retirement fund. And he says, why? I said, because I worked at a radio station directly across the street from your store.
Oh, yeah, I lived in Hamden. I try to eat, you know, when I can afford it, organic. Yeah. And so they have a lot of organic stuff there.
Yeah.
So I was actually a customer of his shop.
Yeah.
But his avant-garde was just a little interesting because a big part of his campaign is against these private utility companies.
Yep.
And he's saying we should no longer be subsidizing utility shareholders. Well, that's convenient since you are a shareholder.
Yeah.
So that was the most interesting thing.
So nothing really earth-shattering then, Megan.
No, which is good. I mean, based on these reports, nothing shady is going on. I mean, there may be just some conflict with your political messaging versus like where you're making your money, but outside of that, I mean, it's refreshing
to
see three candidates that don't have sketchy dealings.
Yeah. Was there any, and forgive me, I may have missed this. Was there any like raw number on the total net worth of Ned Lamont? Because you hear these tens and hundreds of millions of dollars between his family and his cabling business. I mean, you know,
and his wife alone, very, very, very accomplished, venture capitalist.
Yeah.
And yeah, they do have family money. They have a couple trusts set up.
Yeah.
No dollar amounts on Fort. That would have been like real juicy, but they did not list the dollar amounts on any of the stuff. And I didn't feel right. And, Googling their properties and telling people like what, you know, their homes were worth or their addresses. So I left that out of the article.
No. All right, folks, check it out. Megan Portfolio, our weekly check-in with the author behind the Hartford Portfolio. Anything else you may be working on with a little tease? What do we have in line?
I did put one out yesterday, which was really interesting. The CBAC guys, the state employees bargaining agent coalition, they are having a super secret gubernatorial forum.
Ooh.
The interesting thing is they put out the invitation, invite only. You have to be a state employee or family member.
Yeah.
They listed the event is 2 days after the primary, and on their invitation, it said, oh, come join us, Governor Lamont and Ryan Fazio. They completely left Josh Elliott off of the off the thing. And it's 2 days after the primary. It's like, hey, CBAC, you may think you're the fourth branch of government in Connecticut, but the Democrat voters still have a right to vote and select. You know, no king, so the voters are going to select who the nominee is. I did notice, so I published it yesterday, and I did notice say they did update it.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good. That's good. That's good. All right, Megan Portfolio. Meg, thanks. Have a happy rest of the week, and we'll chat next time around. Thank you.
Bye, Paul.
All right, Megan Portfolio there, so check it out.